after doing that for a while, I kind of was like, okay, I got to figure something else out. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Teaching yoga to kind of make money.
Yeah.
And I went to go see Iron Man. Uh-huh. And the music supervisor credit rolled by. And I was like, music supervisor. Okay, that's what I want to do. I want to be a music supervisor.
Did you know what a music supervisor
Absolutely
was?
Absolutely not.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. If my voice sounds a little scratchy right now, that is because this last weekend I performed four shows, count them, four shows, yes, two a day, two on Saturday, two on Sunday, for my new funk, soul, theatrical, immersive concert experience. That's a lot of words in one description. If you don't know what that is, if you don't know what immersive experience or immersive theater is, that's okay. But if you're in LA, you need to get out to Brassroots District Live in the Lot Summer of 73. It's a full funk concert of original music, but it takes place in the year 1973. I'll just leave it at that. You're going to want to come, you're going to want to dress up, and you're going to want to interact with everyone you see there. And quick tip, go chat with that guy and get in his van. I promise you, you will not regret it. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, this week we're doing something a little different. We are actually re-airing an episode. This is one of our first ever episodes of the New Music Business Podcast, and it remains to be our most, it is our most popular episode. So if you haven't heard this one, time to catch up. This one is with music supervisor extraordinaire Jen Malone. She's the music supervisor for Euphoria, the hit TV show on HBO. Of course, she was also the music supervisor for Atlanta, Creed 2, The Resident, Boomerang, Baskets, Shelter, Lady Dynamite, Step Up. That's just scratching the surface. We talk about the business behind music supervision, how you can get into music supervision if you're interested in that, or how you can get your music placed if you're an independent artist or a manager and just want to get your music placed into TV shows and movies. She also goes on a rant about the Discovery Network. And at the time that we recorded this, Discovery was not paying back-end performance royalties, meaning that they were not paying songwriters, and they struck these kind of shady deals, but there was a huge uproar in the songwriter community, and that has since been remedied. Discovery now has deals, once again, blanket licenses with the performing rights organizations, ASCAP, BMI, CSEC, etc. So her righteous rage and everyone else's in the music community, specifically the sync licensing community, more specifically the songwriter community, at the time, their uproar caused Discovery to change their ways. So speaking out actually helps, and I applaud Jen for speaking out and using her platform and her voice to do what is right by songwriters and musicians. Find me on Instagram and Twitter at Ari Herstand. Find all of us that makes this show happen on at Ari's Take, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. Of course, visit aristake.com. Get on that email list. That is where you're going to be kept up to date with all the most current information on the new music business. Please like, subscribe, follow this show wherever you are listening to this right now. If you're on YouTube, leave us a comment. Leave me a comment. I read them all. That would be much appreciated. And head on over to Apple Podcasts. Please leave a 5-star review. That really helps. All right, let's kick into the show. I want to kind of take it back to your story. I mean, as we're going to come to present day, and I want to talk all about Euphoria and everything like that, and which I love the show, and you've done an incredible job on that, and I have a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to get kind of a more complete story of who you are and how you got here. So, let's go back. Where did you grow up? Where are you from?
So grew up in Jersey, okay. But moved to Boston.
Okay.
And I went to Northeastern University.
All
right. Got into PR, started my own PR company. I was a publicist for rock bands for years.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay.
And got super burnt out on that. Working with artists on that level was just, it was exhausting.
Yeah.
So
what kind of artists were you?
Rock, like the Hives, the Helicopters, Wild Hearts, Riverboat Gamblers.
Cool.
Hydrohead Records. So,
right on. So a like lot early 2000s yeah. kind of stuff. Yeah, right yep. on. Nice.
And then after doing that for a while, I kind of was like, okay, I got to figure something else out. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Teaching yoga to kind of make money.
Yeah.
And I went to go see Iron Man. Uh-huh. And the music supervisor credit rolled by. And I was like, music supervisor. Okay, that's what I want to do. I want to be a music supervisor.
Did you know what a music supervisor
Absolutely
was?
Absolutely not.
No, okay.
Absolutely yeah. not. So I am, but I just dug in, started doing all my research. Mm-hmm. I moved out here. Started networking and meeting with anybody that would meet with me.
Oh, wow.
A lot of the, you know, the people, my contacts from doing PR were label folks and just meeting everybody.
Yeah.
And I was told about this event called Honeypot, which yes. is still uh-huh. active today.
Sure.
And I was told to go and you'll meet people. Mm-hmm. And very serendipitously, I met Dave Jordan, who is the supervisor for all of Marvel films.
Oh, wow. And you I'm sure, remember that
name. He was
name
on my list. Oh, I had a list. I had like, nice. You know, I was, okay. I've always been really good at research.
Yes.
Which has proved important right, now right. with hip hop. Mm-hmm. And so he and I totally hit it off.
Amazing.
And I was just like, I want to intern for you. He's like, well, why would you want to intern? Like, because, you know, from being in the music business, we knew a lot of the same people
sure.
coming from labels and stuff. And
yeah.
I was like, well, I don't know what this business is.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to pay me to do something I don't know how to do. This
uh-huh.
is the entertainment business. You start at the bottom.
Yeah.
And I respect that process.
Sure. Oh, amazing.
And he was like, okay, start tomorrow.
Wow. So he hired you as an intern right there.
Yep.
Fantastic.
So,
okay.
So I interned with Dave for 3 days a week or 2 days a week. And then I was with Julia Michaels.
Oh, okay.
Because their business, they work together through Format Entertainment.
Oh, wow.
So I was with her on Fridays.
Was she an artist at this point, or was she just kind
no,
of
No, Julie
writing?
Michaels, the music supervisor.
Oh, just kidding. Okay,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
like, that's
yeah.
interesting.
No, no, no.
Oh,
she does
it.
Pitch Perfect.
Yes, that's Julie Michaels. That
all
makes
of,
more sense.
Yeah, she's,
okay.
she's huge.
Cool, right.
And then after that summer internship was over, I knew that there wasn't going to be a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had several interns, and it's kind of like...
Do internships... Did this one require you to like have a school credit or something? Do you have to be a student? Or
not Dave's at
okay.
the time.
Okay.
I don't know kind of how it is now.
Yeah.
But I was on an... After that internship was over, I was yeah. on an email news group of women in the music industry. And
mm-hmm.
somebody posted that MTV was looking for interns in their supervision department.
Mm.
I was kind of like, okay, I'm a little bit older. This is my second career.
Sure,
I'm going to be with
yeah.
a bunch of college kids, but whatever.
Yeah.
Throw your ego out.
Right.
Like, just
Amazing.
Suck it up.
Yes.
So I went for my interview and they were like, you already know everything we would teach you, but just trust us. Do whatever you need to do to get into the orientation and
yeah.
in the internship program. And with that, you need school credit.
Oh.
So I went to LA Community College. I filled
oh.
out an ad slip. I never went.
Wait.
I never paid. I interned for 3 days and then I got a job as a coordinator.
Oh my gosh. Wait, wait.
Yeah.
Wait, so hold on. You went to community college, but you didn't actually
No,
go.
No, I just went to their ad drop date.
What does that mean?
Like, so it's a day when like colleges, like where you can go and you add classes or drop classes
oh.
for like people that are regularly enrolled.
Yeah, sure.
Like it's like a thing.
Okay. Okay.
And I just went that day and just uh-huh. like registered. But I just got this little piece of paper,
oh,
like,
that was
like a little
for,
receipt.
Viacom,
yeah, I
huh?
mean, it, yeah.
Right. right.
It was to get me in there.
Sure. Most college kids aren't really thinking about that strategy when they're applying for internships. So Viacom probably wasn't looking out for that, but that's fantastic.
I mean,
yeah.
it got me in.
That's amazing.
And
then
yeah.
VH1.
So yeah, because yeah. at that time, you know, VH1 and MTV were the music supervision department
mm-hmm.
were, you know, kind of the same. So I was a coordinator on a couple VH1 shows and really...
What years are we talking now?
10 VH1. Years ago.
Okay. So this is 2009. Okay. All right. So this is like, I mean, that is like almost the height of when Sync was starting to really break artists. I mean, we're like,
One Tree Hill, Grey's Anatomy days. I mean, had you
was Twilight?
Like, Twilight.
Like,
oh yeah,
that was the big one.
Alexander Patsavis. Yep. So was she on your radar at all? Because
I had a list.
You had everybody.
I had a target list of people that I wanted to meet.
Sure.
And I knew, I knew all of the names and who their agents were, and
oh, wow.
I would,
good
what shows
you.
They
this
were working,
yeah.
And I would read interviews, because obviously they all do, you know, online interviews and stuff.
Sure.
I would go and read them all and, you know, just try to, you know, just cold email some people.
Wow.
Like, I remember I cold emailed through Facebook Keir Lehman, and he took a meeting with me, and it was like my first time on a movie lot, which is really cool.
Wow.
And so, you know, he was just, a lot of people were just super kind and supportive to just, you know, take that coffee with me.
Amazing.
And so, you know, it was just doing that. But I had my list.
You had the list.
And so, you know, while I was, so with VH1, just really, you know, working in reality TV as a music supervisor is tough.
Sure.
It's not easy.
Not a big budget.
It's a grind. Yeah. I mean, you have, where it's scripted, you may have three editors tops.
Mm.
On the height of a reality show, you might have 10 to 12 editors working on different different episodes and different acts.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
So, and there's just so much music.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, you don't have a composer, or at least none of my shows had composers.
Okay.
I don't know.
Sure.
Like mine didn't.
Yeah.
So it was boot camp for sure. But
you were a coordinator on this, or
I was a coordinator
working under a supervisor.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And just kind of hop. And then, you know, I was only with the production company for the, you know, the time that the show's in production. I was never really in-house.
Okay.
So I just kind of would bounce around to different shows, and
sure.
MTV would kind of, you know, they would have a show like Vice, Guide to Everything, started at MTV, and Jamie at Vice, she was the supervisor, but, you know, MTV gave me that gig to be the coordinator, to kind of be the MTV person.
Now, break down the difference between supervisor and coordinator. What is a coordinator? What's kind of the day-to-day job duties of a coordinator?
So the coordinator is support for the supervisor.
Okay.
They handle a lot of admin stuff, quotes, music clearance, script breakdowns, you know, everything from like getting wave files to the music editors, helping with, you know, budget clearances.
Okay.
And then, you know, as well, depending on the super, I mean, it all depends on the supervisor.
Sure.
And how they structure their,
yeah,
their house.
Yeah. And budget clearances, you mean from the
to clear
production.
Music.
Okay. And so
to clear a song.
Sure. So when you're going to kind of the label or the publishing company or the manager or some, or the artist,
the copyright holders.
Yeah. And so you have, basically how much you have to offer for the song, and then that's,
well, it's the whole thing. I mean, a quote request is, you know, what's the song, who are the songwriters, who's the publishing company, how long is the use, what type of use, the scene description, and then, you know, the fees that you end up negotiating.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, just making sure, doing the research, you know, who are all the writers, who are all the publishers, and just, you know, clear music, because you can't use a song if you can't clear it.
Right. So actually, I want to talk about that. I want to pause on like your biography for a second, because this is really interesting. That's something that I've seen evolve over the years. I'm sure you've seen it evolve over the years, from probably initially people emailing you MP3s, attachments, to like Dropbox, to Box, to now Disco. And
love Disco.
Love Disco. Okay.
Love Disco.
Okay, yeah.
Love Disco.
That's what I've been hearing a lot of, because of the metadata is just so clear in there, and you can the contact information, or not
you,
always.
You would hope.
Okay.
You would hope. I can add my own metadata, but some of it at least is just, for the independents that are really good, they will definitely have all the contact information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes from the majors, it'll just have their name on it.
So why do you love Disco? What makes it special? What makes it different from Dropbox?
Well, it's just much more user-friendly for what I need it for.
Okay.
Dropbox, I think, is really good. Like, I'll use Dropbox for, like, my files and admin stuff. Okay. But for music, it's just, it's a great way to organize my music. So I have all of my shows and all of my pitches in there. Mm. And then, you know, I'll have a general music folder where, you know, I'll have 60s, 70s, reggae, rock, you know, world music, Afrobeat, like just, and so everything can kind of go in there, but it's just, and it can hold a lot more music. And I hate iTunes. No disrespect. Sure.
No, of course. So do people, do you request pitches through Disco now? I mean, when you're,
I send out my Disco link and I say, upload your music here, make sure all the metadata is in there.
Amazing.
And that's usually.
Yeah. When did that switch for you? When did you start using Disco?
I don't remember. Maybe a year ago? I don't know. Okay. I just was hearing about it and I was seeing it. I like the interface.
Yeah.
It's clean. It's not too busy. I can organize it whatever way I want to. Mm. It's just very user friendly. Yeah. And since it's up in the cloud, I'm not going to lose my shit when, sorry.
Can swear. That's okay. Fine. It's
I'm not going to lose it when iTunes crashes.
When it crashes, yes.
So yes. I've never been a fan of iTunes. I think it was just terrible. And so I was working in just folders, but it got to the point where, you know, I got so many projects that I couldn't hold all of the music on my desktop. And I don't want to have a drive because
you'll lose that, it'll crash.
Or it crashes, you know, it's just kind of, you know, I kind of do backups. Mm-hmm. With Disco, I don't know if it would ever be possible to kind of have it accessible offline, but that would be the only thing.
Sure.
That I would love.
I'll tell Carl. He was just in here.
Well, I love Katrina.
Katrina, yes. She's LA-based. She's fantastic.
I love you, Katrina.
Yeah. They'll be listening for sure. When Carl... Well, he was a music supervisor who started Disco.
Australia, right?
In Australia, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he... that's probably why so many music supervisors love it, because like a music supervisor and he started it that way. So that's cool. It's that's something that, I mean, from an independent artist's standpoint, indie artists are always looking for basically how to get their music to music supervisors in a way that they're going to actually listen to the music. And so I've been trying to distill, you know, how do you remove the most amount of friction to get your music there? And I've just been hearing like Disco kind of makes it really easy. And so that's kind of a way.
Yeah.
When you receive pitches from anybody, like, how do you how do you like to be contacted? Do you like to be contacted? Or do you just want to go after, find music on your own?
I mean, it's tricky because, you know, there is that, like, trust factor that I don't necessarily have with artists who will say, yeah, I own everything. And it's like, no, you don't, bro.
Right.
Like, or no, I don't think you own that Journey sample that's in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's hard. And so my ass is on the line when I'm licensing this music. So I do prefer to get music through independent licensing companies and independent pitchers that I have relationships with that I can call or email and they'll get back to me right away when I need to clear something on the mix stage and I literally need it cleared now.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a really interesting point about artists not really understanding ownership.
Correct.
And all of that. And hip hop, I'm sure, that's probably the most challenging because so many artists, especially bedroom producers and bedroom, you know, hip hop artists, use samples that they don't realize that they can't legally do.
Old Town Road.
Right.
It's a perfect example.
Exactly. Nine Inch Nails, I'm sure, was very pleased in the end with it.
Yes. Yeah. I used the song.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They've been doing quite well from that, I'm sure. But the initial producer who sold the song for $30 to Lil Nas X.
Stole it.
Didn't realize. I mean, knew, but didn't just... didn't think anybody would catch him or something. I don't know.
I think he just didn't know that he probably had to do it, or that he couldn't do it, or there was a copyright issue.
So are there any tools that you use to help you with clearance so nothing falls through the cracks? I mean, do you have like audio recognition software? Do you like?
No.
No. Okay. So you just trust the person that you're talking to if they say that they own 100%.
Well, I mean, it depends. That's why I prefer to go through companies that are vetting it and have contracts and reps and warranties and stuff like that. But it's just... You know, I do license a lot of stuff from independent artists, but it's just, it's hard because it's like, okay, well, who owns it? All right. Well, who's the writers? I figured out the questions to ask, especially with the hip hop kids. Who's the producer? Like, okay, who owns it? I own everything. Okay. Yeah. Who made the beat?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well then is he a writer on the song? Well, I don't know. And it's just digging deeper and deeper. And then I, you know, for one artist, I had to go one step further because I'm listening to the beat or they just said, yeah, no, they own it. It's a sample from, I don't know, some like Japanese film score or something. And I was like, okay, goodbye. I just can't because I just don't have time to go through it.
Yeah.
You know, constantly, or they'll send me rough mixes. And like, I'm not going to, you know, there was an incident in Euphoria with a label that sent me, you know, rough mixes of stuff or demos. And I put it in. And then we got the finished version and it was different. And Sam was like, I'm not feeling this. I want what we've been living with.
Right.
So thankfully the artist would like let us use that. And then when they released the song, it was something else, but it's like, you know, like
that's tough.
Rough version 3.2 audio REF. Yeah. And I'm like, gosh. I just can't.
Yeah. Are these artists that you're discovering just through your own research and like, oh wow, this is a really cool song, and then you kind of have to track them down and have those conversations that way?
Yep. Word of mouth to friends of friends.
Okay.
I kind of find it everywhere. And sometimes when people I try to listen to everything when it looks like it's, you know, there's, you know, no spelling mistake, like shit like that. Like somebody wrote, like, you know, I really admire, you know, your work, YOU*RE.
Oh,
and I was just like, I can't. and I know that's really picky, but it's you know, it's just, okay, well, you know, you just have to be detail oriented or, you know, what are the splits? And they just send me all the producer, you know, PKAs. And I'm like, no, I need their real legal names.
Yes.
You know, who's their publishing company? ASCAP. So I think for independent artists, it's just a matter of really educating yourself on how to license your music. What do splits mean? What is ASCAP and BMI? Do you have splits? Like, just have that information to make my life easier, which will make my life easier to sync your music.
Totally.
If you don't have that, after I go back and forth three times, I'm done. Next. Like, I just, in TV, you don't have that time. And just when there's 27 songs in one episode of Euphoria, I don't have physical time. Totally. Not like, you know.
Do you have a coordinator?
I have a co-supervisor, Nicole, that I'm working with on one of my Amazon shows that I'm very excited about.
Okay, okay.
And I am just extending an offer to somebody else today.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's super exciting. That's amazing.
Oh,
great. Yeah, I'm saying, like, that's a lot of work for you to be doing.
I had a coordinator on...
I had
a coordinator on Euphoria and Atlanta.
Oh, great. Okay.
But she's moved on. And so, you know, we've been talking to other people and I'm very excited.
Yeah.
So starting off 2020 with, I think she's going to kick ass.
And amazing.
I just, I need help.
Right.
There's no way I could do it by myself.
Of course.
No way.
Right. Now, when you, getting back to kind of the discovering how you find music, I'm very curious to know the tools you use. I mean, are you using like Spotify Discover Weekly? Are you going through SoundCloud? Are you
everywhere?
Everywhere. Are you on TikTok? Like, what? How are you looking at music right
now? Everything.
You are. Okay. And Do you spend much of your days and your time in active discovery, or is it kind of just as you hear stuff, you Shazam it and just kind of figure out, you know, that kind of a thing?
Both.
All of it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just whenever I hear a song that I'm like, ooh, this could be good for either one of my current projects mm-hmm. or just something to go into my someday sync list.
Ah,
okay. Or, you know, I have playlists that I share with a couple colleagues of, like, you know, cool music that we find to just share. You know, cool. it's my girls. It's yeah. three other music supervisors nice. That I'm super tight with.
Yeah.
But everything. I mean, Instagram, SoundCloud, TikTok, AudioMac.
Yeah.
Not Facebook, but yeah. Spotify.
Okay.
Apple Music.
Yeah. Okay. Like, so you're, yeah.
Shit that I just coming, Sirius Satellite Radio, mm-hmm. like every, oh, everything.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So with your process, I'm when it comes to new shows and you come in on a show, so you came in on Euphoria, was it after the pilot or?
So the pilot was done.
Right.
It got the pickup and then I came on board and had to, you know, rescore. We had to rescore the pilot.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because, you know, I think there was just, I mean, there, you know, when you're selling a pilot, you want to put the best music in there whatsoever to sure. sell it. But then at the end of the day, when it's a $1.5 million, you know, song, or you got three, mm-hmm. you know, you got a Migos song that you can barely hear, or yeah. Sarah McLachlan, you know, like that shit all has to come out.
Right, right.
So we kind of, you know, pick and choose which ones we want to keep and which yeah. ones we can, you know, we're going to be able to replace. And some stuff is just straight up not clearable. Sure. So we would have to get rid of that as well.
And was that a conversation, kind of who created the sonic tone and theme and vibe of Euphoria?
I mean, I think it's all Sam,
okay.
our creator, director, yeah. writer.
And did he kind of say, this is what I'm thinking for the musical styles and kind of go in this direction or this vibe?
I mean, if you listen to the show, mm-hmm. there is no
That's what's
direction.
So interesting about it, is
there
that the
is
music
no
is all over the place for Euphoria specifically. Whereas like a lot of other shows have much more of a cohesive sound and
yep.
theme, and you can listen down like... I always think early on, I always kind of go back to like Grey's Anatomy
right.
and what they did. It's like that had such a sound, and it was kind of those like, you know, early 2000, mid 2000 singer-songwriters. And same with like One Tree Hill. It kind of had a
right.
sound, and Parenthood had a sound. These like kind of acoustic-y mm-hmm. things. Empire has a sound.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Euphoria is all over the place. And that's what's – so when you're kind of working with Sam or – I guess, what is the process? Because is it something where the picture is locked and then you come in and
no.
you talk about
it?
No. Okay, so
no,
when do you come
I
into the process?
I'm involved as early as possible because
okay.
I don't want the editors putting in too much stuff
yeah, sure.
that we can't clear, and then we got temp love, and then it's just, you know, so
right.
I try to get in as, you know, as early as possible.
Okay.
For Euphoria specifically, you know, I sat with my editors like not daily, but I was there and post all the time and just getting them clearable music and them sending me scenes and I need music for this. And it was just, you know, it's a collaboration. It's a process.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I don't think any show or film or whatever has music supervisor picking out every single song. Period.
Sure,
you
sure.
know, it's there's Sam had some ideas. Our editors are super talented and have such great musical tastes.
Yeah.
So, but there was no discussion of the tone or the sound of Euphoria. It was just fucking good songs.
Yeah.
And songs that fit the picture and just, you know, you just kind of knew what they worked.
Sure.
So, you know, I knew that there was going to be a lot of hip hop. So that, you know, I definitely had a bunch of hip hop bins
yeah.
of clearable of stuff I knew I could clear
sure.
for independence, because also we did have a budget.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
it doesn't seem like we did, but we did.
No, I mean, Beyonce's in the show. I mean,
she was not that expensive.
Really? Oh, wow.
I mean,
okay.
she was fair.
Yes.
She was fair. And
cool.
that's all I, you know, when we're doing this, I just, you know, we just ask for fairness for both sides, for the artist and for our show.
Yeah. Yeah. And then working with the composer, Labyrinth, right? On the,
So Lab and I did not, we had our own lanes because we had our
okay.
own shit to deal. Like, it, it was just, there was no, except for All For Us, there, we just had our own kind of, like, shit that we had to deal with.
So it wasn't necessarily where you would all come into a room and say, okay, we're going to do, use score here.
We didn't have, we didn't really have any official spotting sessions, which is, you know, kind of odd, but, you know, Lab was in the UK, but he and Sam and the editor had such a unique shorthand, and you know, they worked with a lot of the stems, and we had a brilliant music editor who would be able, you know, they would just go in and fuck with the stems and create, you know, just reuse this here and play that one backwards here and just use the drum loop here. So they, you know, so that's kind of how it worked. But on my end, I had way too much song stuff to work with to really have that, you know, collaboration. And when they had that shorthand, they were good to go. They didn't need me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
was that similar on Atlanta, and how, what was that?
We don't have a composer on Atlanta.
So there was
just all needle drops.
Just that. Oh, wow.
So it was myself, my co-supervisor, Fam, on that show, Isaac and Kyle, our two editors, and our co-producer, Caitlin, and Hero and Donald. And
Right.
That was it. But yeah, we didn't have a composer on that show.
Okay. And so with I mean, these two, but also the films that you work on. So you would, like with Creed 2, for instance, when did you come into that process? And
so Creed, Fam, my co-supervisor for Atlanta, brought me into that.
Okay.
He was approached by Ludwig Göransson, who's the composer, to music supervise season two, the sequel.
Sure.
And Fam brought me on to, you know, to co-super with him. So we came in, it was almost, we were almost done shooting. Because we were not done shooting. Because I remember, it's funny, where I parked was that we, there was a scene that ended up on the cutting room floor where Michael B. and Tessa were performing on Jimmy Kimmel. So we had this big on camera, and so I was there. You know, I had to kind of manage that whole thing. Oh, wow. Didn't end up making it into the movie, which I was like,
cool.
But but yeah, so we were still shooting, and you know, that one, we, there was collaboration with Ludwig, who is just amazing and so cool, and he and his team just roll with it, and that's what you have to do on a lot of this, like a lot of it, you just got to roll with it, like
in what way?
Changes, we need to, you know, do this montage, and we need this to happen, and that, like, it's just, there's a lot of,
when the edits come through, it's like, okay, now we need to kind of reimagine this scoring.
It's just
section.
A lot.
Yeah, sure.
It's just a lot.
And what's the timeline from when you kind of wrapped shooting to when kind of you locked, you know, picture and everything, and then it came out?
For Creed, we, like, locked and shipped in Printmaster, like, right before it was released. I remember it was released right around Thanksgiving, so a year ago. And, yeah, we were working, like, up until the day. Really? Like, because we had so much original original music and unreleased music. Like, Ari Lennox, Shea Butter Baby was, you know, we had that in ours, in Creed 2 first.
Cool.
And the whole desert montage was something that we created and had written for the show, for the film. So it was, you know, it was...
Yeah.
It was a lot.
How long was that time period that you were working on it? Okay.
I mean,
because film, it takes so much longer, and you have so much more time than TV.
Yes.
And so I'm curious about the difference in process with TV. Like you said, you need it right now.
Yeah.
Whereas film, I mean, are you trading in and out songs? Like, is the director, like, are you experimenting? And yeah.
It depends. You know, cuts change and evolve, and then the music needs change and evolve.
That makes sense.
It's just not a daily, I mean, until, you know, Creed ended up being a daily thing for, you know, for the last couple months, the last 2 months, to try to get everything in and done and finished. But, you know, Euphoria was like 6 months of just every day cut. You know, I'm on a film now that it's like, okay, a couple days, don't hear anything. A lot of it is hurry up and wait.
Sure. Okay.
So, but it depends on the filmmaker and the studio, on how things change and stay the same, and the involvement with composers and stuff like that. Like, it's just every project is just so different. You know, Atlanta couldn't be more different from Euphoria, which is different than anything else I've ever done in my life.
Are you able to work on multiple projects simultaneously? Is there ever a time where you're doing multiple things all at once?
I have a lot of projects right now.
You do?
I think I have like maybe 7 shows and a movie.
All right now, that you're working on right now. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Okay, yeah.
It's a lot.
That's why you need to extend that offer to your new coordinator.
Yes, yes. Like, that's why I'm very excited to have her on board.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, I think it's just, you know, I have some projects that are not as music intensive.
Okay.
So that's, you know, helps. And you know, I try to be very efficient and, you know, just get it done. But then there's also days when it's like 8 to 12 because between, you know, 7 when the phones stop ringing and the emails stop coming into 12, that's when I can like really dig into my searches and really get inspiration. Because otherwise you can't get into it when emails are popping. I need this wave, or we're missing 5%, or you know. Yeah. So it's just like I have my list of my searches, and then it's kind of like,
yeah,
all right, here we go. Get my dinner and just really dig in and get into it.
Amazing. How much does your personal music taste, play into what you do? Because you're placing music of every genre all over the place. It's like, just even looking at the music that you've placed in the various shows and movies, it's like, well, I could never tell what your music taste is, your personal taste is.
Right.
I'm assuming it's rock because you started as a rock publicist, but I have no idea. And I'm curious to know, like, you know, how that plays into any of this, if it does at all, or you're just kind of looking like what fits best for this scene and the vibe and the tone.
I mean, I do think it's mostly it's, you know, as a music supervisor, the music is there to service the story and to fulfill the director's vision. And yes, my personal taste will come into play, but, you know, it's just, it's really what's the best song, what works for this scene. My tastes now are just kind of all over the map. Like, I've definitely, like, dug into hip hop, and because when I started Atlanta, I knew nothing about hip hop.
Wow.
Like, that was not my.
They still brought you in. Amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great.
That, but also, you know, like yacht rock. I'm thinking of like all of my, but like all of my stations on my satellite. You know, it's Hip Hop Nation, and then it's First Wave, which I love that kind of old school stuff. I mean, a lot of times, like, I grew up on industrial, like, wax track shit.
Okay.
So I'll bust that out every once in a while. And it's like old Ministry and stuff.
Wow.
But old school soul, like old Stax and Brunswick Records and that shit, I love.
I saw you place the Donnie Hathaway song in Euphoria, which I love Donnie Hathaway. Mm-hmm. And so that was really cool to see, because it's not something that many people know, unless you know classic soul, but especially not the teenagers in the show would know that.
That was Sam and Julio fucking around one night, and then turned out that the song is very important to Zendaya as well for personal, on a personal level. So, but yeah, we almost had a Donny Hathaway song in Creed, or did we? I don't even
remember. Yeah, sure.
but we, you know, so it's just, but yeah, that was, I mean, that was one of my favorite placements as well. It was, it was huge.
Yeah. So I'm also curious, the function of a lot of, some of your placements. For instance, so there was a scene in Euphoria, and it was a real interesting juxtaposition because this was, I believe it was episode 2, where this guy's getting beat up.
That's the Air Supply.
Air Supply, right. And it was this like real peppy song, and it's like very cheerful, and you're witnessing, like, it opens on the dude's face who just is all bloodied from, he just got totally beat up, and now there's like this like very peppy, upbeat, happy song happening, and then you kind of cut to the guy the boyfriend who's like coming out of the shower and he's naked and he's like, you know, clean. And it's just, it was so interesting to me because like watching that, I almost felt like this was the attacker's kind of inner song, and it made me think like, wow, this dude's a complete psychopath.
Yeah,
because like it was like, oh, he's not human. It like dehumanized him. That song to me, like if there was a different song in there, I would have reacted totally differently. But because this juxtaposition, because of this song, I'm like, wow, this is like representing him. This is what he feels right now. The guy who just like beat the living shit out of this other dude.
Yeah.
And completely unjustifiably too. It wasn't like, you know, self-defense. And it's like, wow, that song like completely changed how I felt about that character.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is a psychopath because this is the song that he's feeling right now.
Yeah.
What was the intention behind that? Was that it?
Real quick, I want to let you know about Too Lost. Too Lost is a new distribution company to the space. And let me tell you, I am very impressed with them. I got a full deep dive demo with the founder. And yeah, they're very innovative. And when you come into the distribution space at this stage with how crowded it is, you better be innovative. And they are. Yes, they will get your music out to Spotify, Apple Music, all the places, plus 450 other outlets around the world. They do not take a commission. This is why 300,000 artists and labels have already used them. They've already distributed 7 million songs. They offer payment splitting, and they don't charge your collaborators for this service for the payment splitting. They will just pay your collaborators directly for free. They have publishing administration with BMG, so you know it's legit. A lot of distributors have fallen into trouble with using some other less than legit pub admin services. Well, Too Lost is partnered with BMG. You know it's legit. They offer instant royalty advances. This is something that's very cool. And if you have historical streaming data and you need just a bulk payment up front, they can see how much your music has earned in the past. I'm like, all right, we think we know what you're going to earn in the next 3 years. Here's a check for $100,000 or whatever it will be. And you can just click a button and get that distributed and into your account immediately. They do lyrics and credits distribution for free. They have a very innovative analytics platform where, yes, you will see real-time analytics for Spotify, Apple Music, but also Pandora, Deezer, SoundCloud, and Peloton. They're the only ones that do Peloton. They also have a service where you can search the internet wherever your music is being used, and it will just show you a chart of everywhere, every TikTok video, everywhere, every YouTube video, everywhere your music is possibly being used. I've never seen this before. That was very cool. They'll register you with SoundExchange, and they have a fraud prevention tool, and they're doing fraud prevention. So if you're worried about your music, you know, getting a bot attack or something like that and getting ripped down, which we've seen is a big issue. They have fraud prevention tools that are better than most other distributors that I have seen. Check out Too Lost. You can just go to TooLost.com, use the promo code ARIESTAKE for 3 months free and try them out. Let them know what you think.
Sure.
Okay.
No, I mean, it was like originally, I think it was Seals and Croft, and we got denied because it was very, you know, they just didn't want to, whatever, they just denied the use.
Yeah.
Probably because it was a very, very violent scene. And,
yeah.
And so we kind of like really liked that yacht rock idea.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things where it was like, it's funny, but yet I'm watching a very disturbing scene. Like that scene was very hard to watch. Like at that point, that's when I emailed my coordinator at the time. I was like, if at any time you feel uncomfortable watching cuts about you with Euphoria, please let me know and we'll work around it. Mm-hmm. Like whether it's like the 30 dicks or like, you know, there's just a lot of heavy stuff in that show and it's very hard to watch. Yeah. And then, but this one, it's like I said, it's like, it's funny because then he's like, you know, just getting dressed and putting on the deodorant.
Right.
And this
so
kid is like, you know, on the verge of death. Like, it's, it was very intense. But the music really did like like fuck with the scene, and it was very, you know, it definitely played in contrast to what was happening.
Yeah, I mean, that was, for me, that was like the turning point of his character. It was just like, okay, now he's a complete psychopath.
Yeah, he's absolutely a psychopath.
Right, right.
he's very scary.
Right. Were there conversations that you had with Sam about that? It was like, let's go this route with it.
I think it was me and Julio.
Julio, okay.
Who's our lead editor, kind of were, you know, fucking with different songs there. And that was like, it was, you know, sometimes it's like, it's for our amusement almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what if we just put this in there? It's like, okay, that works. And so, wow. You know, like.
It was interesting because that scene is cut in two. There's a scene that happens in between it. And so the first half of, like, during the actual beatdown is a song that seems to be more of an obvious choice. It's much more intense and darker.
Was that Score? Was that Lab Score?
I think it was Score. Yeah. And it was just much more intense, and you're like in it, and you're like, you know, you're experiencing it as it happens, and it feels like it sounds and like it looks and everything. And then when you cut back to it, and it opens on this dude's bloody face, and that's when the Air Supply song kicks in, and you're like, whoa. Yeah. And then you see him, and
yeah,
it was like, that was such an emotional journey, that whole, like, you know, sequence. But yeah, that was crazy.
That one was very intense.
Yeah. So, you know, you are placing a lot of independent music in a lot of what you do. Have you noticed that, are there any standout artists who you've seen that because of one of your placements have maybe broken a little bit or gotten, you know, more doors opened up, or, you know, they were like struggling working a day job and like this was a paycheck for them that enabled them to quit their job, or anything that you've seen, you've like been able to really help independent artists in a significant way?
Yeah, I mean, I think for my reality shows, you know, it's such a low budget, but the residuals are really good. And I have had artists been like, hey, just so you know, that placement, you know, paid for our van to go to South By.
Wow.
Or, you know, I just had an artist on The Resident on Fox that they got 10,000 Shazams in one night.
Wow.
Or like Dodger, which was... who I love the song. It was called Hot. It was at the end of 106 of Euphoria. It was like 17,000 Shazams in one night.
Oh my gosh.
Like, and then Ramsey, the manager, emailed me. She was in Six also. Uh-huh. She was, you know, the manager told me, you know, she was, you know, trucking along at 3 to 5K a month on Spotify. Mm. And after the show aired within a couple weeks, it was $750,000 streams. And the video got over a million on YouTube.
And that was from this one placement in one episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Like that's life changing. And like, as an independent artist, as someone, I remember my first placement. It was on MTV, The Real World.
I mean, you're still probably getting money from that, the mailbox money, you know?
Seriously. Yeah. No. And it's like, you know, that was like my first total background instrumental.
Yeah.
This was at the time, this was circa like 2005. It was my first CD just came out, and they placed, like, you know, it was only 20 seconds of this little piano music, but like, that changed my life. People actually recognized, fans of mine recognized the song and like hit me up about it. It's like, I think I just heard you on The Real, because this is also at the peak of The Real World.
Right.
And they like knew the song, they heard it. I'm like, wow, this is so interesting. What can happen next? And then Lindsay Wolfington placed one of my songs in One Tree Hill. And this was like the era of iTunes. And so I went from all my songs being like about the same level of popularity to literally, that night, the bar, just a solid bar of that one song. And then for the next like 2 years, people came, literally every show I played, people came up to me and said, I discovered you from One Tree Hill, and I'm here because of your song in One Tree Hill. And I'm just like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's like, you know, how people found Ingrid Michaelson from, mm-hmm. you know, Grey's Anatomy and the Old Navy commercial. And The Fray, of course, was broken from Grey's and like all of these bands. And so I've been curious about the trends and if you've noticed what's been happening, because like, you know, early mid 2000s in the height of that era, like Grey's era and stuff like that, a lot of artists were kind of breaking from that. Then I've seen it evolve into like commercials, advertisements, mm-hmm. breaking a lot of artists. We had mm-hmm. American Authors, Imagine Dragons, Ex-Ambassadors, Fits in the Tantrums. And now I'm curious to know if you've seen where the trend is shifting and if you're seeing that artists are kind of looking at sync as a way to they're being discovered or they're breaking or getting fans, or if it's kind of now more of a paycheck, which is can help buy a van. I mean, which is, you know, not to belittle that because that's right. everybody needs a paycheck, right. especially right. indie
right.
artists.
Right.
Where you're seeing it kind of move in like how it's affecting and helping indie artists.
Well, I think, you know, for a platform like Euphoria mm-hmm. Or Atlanta, there's definitely an uptick in everything. Like there is just more, it's just really big exposure opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that, you know, it's both mm-hmm. of finance, you know, getting a sync, you know, they might not be that much money, sure. but it's cash. Yeah. And it's also part of an artist's story. So again, kind of switching it from being a publicist.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, looking at it that way. Well, we had a placement in Euphoria and Insecure and, you know, whatever other shows.
Sure.
So it's definitely impacting artists and I think the way people listen and find music.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, you know, you look at like the Euphoria play, you just type Euphoria into Spotify and there's all these unofficial but really cool curated playlists,
yeah.
but not necessarily the songs from the show, but it's just, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the songs from the show will make it in there and then some.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I saw one that had 250,000 followers for an unofficial Euphoria Spotify playlist.
Which I have a lot of artists contacting me like, why was my song? And I'm like, this is not an official list.
Right. I don't have anything to do with this playlist.
No, no, no. Yeah. It was not in the show.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Right.
It's a good song.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is interesting how Spotify, now in the age of Spotify, how that's playing off of, we're starting to see some of the most popular user-generated playlists on Spotify are the soundtracks or,
yes.
you know, unofficial soundtracks of the shows.
Yeah.
Whereas like soundtracks have always been a big thing. You know, the Garden State soundtrack, that was my college experience. Like that
right.
was, you
right.
know, that was burned on a CD from a girl I liked. And like right. I lived on that Garden State soundtrack. And now it's kind of evolved and the soundtracks, now it's Spotify is like, a lot of playlisters are taking kind of the vibe and the feel of the show and will put the songs from
the show. They're making mixtapes.
Yeah. And then they just kind of add other songs in there, which is just so interesting because there is no limit. It's not like, you know, the 70 minutes you can fit on the CD and it
right.
just kind of keeps going.
Right.
Do you curate any kind of playlists or is that part of any of the shows or movies you work on for like official soundtracks or anything like that?
I'll make an official resident Spotify playlist of all the songs in the show.
And who's that put out typically? Like who does it say it's created by?
Me.
You? It does. Okay, great. It
has but I name. Know that there's other, you know, there's other people that make the resident playlists that'll or different shows playlists.
Mm-hmm. Can people follow Jen Malone on Spotify and all the stuff?
I don't know. You can follow playlists, but you can't see like, but I don't know.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not that interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, you know, I follow a million playlists and I have my own, you know, private stuff of different, you mm-hmm. know, moods and fresh finds type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
cool. Yeah. Right on. So, so you're working 7 shows simultaneously right now.
I think it's 7.
Yeah. And, is this something that, I mean, when you're kind of working so many shows simultaneously, like how do you keep everything straight. What is your, I'm so curious about like your workflow or your process, or I mean, is it all just through email? What's your project management tools? Are you?
I don't know. I have no idea. My Google Doc grids.
Really? Okay.
I mean, it's definitely, you know, like the resident on Fox is, you know, not a lot of music, but we get to do really cool stuff, and the showrunners, and the, it's such a great group of people that really trust me and kind of let me do whatever I want. And then I have The Wilds for Amazon that I'm co-supervising with Nicole Weisberg, who's amazing. Awesome. That's going to be an amazing show. And then I have Umbrella Academy Season 2, which I'm stoked on. Awesome. And that's really fun because it's the same thing as far as like, no rules. Boomerang Season 2 for BET.
Cool.
Defending Jacob for Apple, which is with Chris Evans and Michelle Dockery.
Yeah.
So that one's not, you know, crazy music intensive, but we have very cool key moments that that we make music really special.
When you're working, do you notice a difference working with streaming platforms like Apple or Amazon versus more traditional networks versus like, you know, cable networks? Like, are there different ways?
Just standards and practices.
Yeah.
Just S&P.
In terms of, what about rates? Like indie rates. So, you know, for instance, like Netflix, it's kind of known that their standard fee for a placement is like $10,000, but they always ask you to like give up your back end on that.
Well, that is a completely different story that we cannot go into.
Okay,
right,
we won't
now.
Go into that. But I'm curious, like, because that's like that a Netflix thing. And then
I don't think that there's really a standard rate for, I mean, every show has a different budget, it has different musical needs. I mean, it depends. If you're going to be, you know, a 3-minute montage, like the rate should be different. So I wouldn't say that there's a standard rate of $10,000 per song. I don't think that that can be, I don't want your listeners thinking, oh, I get a song on Netflix, it's going to be $10,000, because it's not.
Sure. What's the range for a lot? I mean,
it depends. I mean,
indie artists, rather.
It depends.
Okay.
It depends. Sometimes I have a lot of money to give an indie artist on an episode of a show, or sometimes it's like $3,000-$5,000. But it depends on a lot of factors, what my budget is, how big their use is. What my budget is like, it's a lot of budget, who's involved, and you know, it's just but there, besides the whole back end thing, which is a terrible thing, and it makes me very, very, very upset and very sad that that's what networks are doing, like straight up the new Discovery thing. I worked for Discovery for 3 months. Loved it there, everybody treated me really well, but what they are doing is terrible. It's awful. And I just want to know, like, it gets me very upset. But I stand with, you know, the composers, and I'm like, take your music out of there, because if you're not going to get paid anyway, what are you losing?
Right.
Because at the end of the day, when that comes back to someone like me, I am going to get the music note from the executive. Music is generic. I'm not feeling the music. This is it's because you are completely, totally devaluing music. And that, so don't come complaining to me when your show doesn't sound good, because the good composers are not going to stand for,
No, this is good.
It's awful. Yeah. And I know that, from my experience with Netflix, it is an option.
That's what I've heard too from the supervisor I've talked to. They say
it's an
Netflix
option.
Asked to put that in there to give up your back end performance royalties, but you can negotiate that out. Just to give the listeners who are not familiar with what's happening with Discovery, could you give a little breakdown that they're just basically asking for?
They don't want to pay anything.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, I think you know, the good thing about working on MTV and Viacom shows mm-hmm. is that the back end is really good. So yes. I might not have a lot of money to pay you up front, uh-huh. but you're going to get what's called back end royalties, right. mailbox money.
Yes.
And I have a friend who from Boston, and her band had a placement in the Hills, and she still get like the Hills, mm-hmm, like OG.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I remember that.
And yeah. she still gets yeah. money and from that.
Performance royalties, ASCAP, BMI, correct. That kind of stuff. Yes.
So what Discovery wants to do is, I think they want to keep that for themselves, or they don't want to pay it out or something, mm. but they do not want to give that. So then therefore, you're getting what, 200, if you're a composer that mm-hmm. has a full library of cues, mm-hmm. and the, you know, the editors are just picking and choosing what goes in and creating their own score, and mm-hmm. you're getting paid probably shit for that. Mm-hmm. You know, originally the payoff is, well, I'm going to, you know, that stuff is going to, that those shows are going to air and I'm going to make the back end.
Yep.
But now that that's cut out, like, what are
right.
you,
what is
like,
the
Discovery, yeah. get it together. How dare you? Yeah. You yeah. pay nothing for music anyway. Mm. And now you're going to take that away from these people that are making your shows sound good, mm-hmm. sound amazing, and really, like, help emphasize the emotion and what's happening, mm-hmm. because if not, don't have fucking music in your show.
Right, right, yeah.
Sorry,
no, absolutely.
Like, this
no,
gets
but
me
seriously, no,
so this angry. Is, well, if this is what yeah. you want, mm-hmm. fine. Here's, yeah. you know, give them your drum stems, right. give them your guitar stems, yeah. and that's it, because
seriously.
You're not, if you're, if you can't get nothing, what is it? Nothing of nothing is nothing. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. if Discovery is not going to pay me for my music up front, mm-hmm. or pay me shit up front, mm-hmm. which they will,
yeah.
and then I don't even get back end,
mm-hmm. what's the point? Right.
Pull
Why?
It. Right. Pull your shit.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yes. And this is a good opportunity for all the artists who are working with the sync licensing companies. You know, go to them and say, hey, are we still working with Discovery? And if we are, we should pull our music. Pull it.
Pull because it. You're not going to make any money. You're right. not going to lose any money.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Because if you're not getting the back end right. anyway.
Well, and if you're working with a library also, make sure that your library is not working with Discovery anymore until they reinstate that back end. Because I know a lot of artists who work with music libraries mm-hmm. or sync licensing companies, they don't really know. They leave it up to their company to mm-hmm. just place their music everywhere. And they don't really know necessarily. They're not getting the deals. They're just yeah. like, you know, you clear whatever. We trust you.
Right.
But, you know, they... This is an opportunity where to show the networks and at least Discovery, and so because that would be a horrible precedent if that continues on to
it's
anybody
terrible.
Else. And
Pull
so
it.
We need to stop that right now before it goes any further, and to really put value back into the music.
Absolutely.
And so this is like, yes, a good call to action for artists. Like, ask your licensing company, ask your library, are we working with Discovery? And if so, you should stop right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Because it's just because, again, coming back to, you know what I do whenever, you know, we want it to sound, you know, we want a show with $4,000, $5,000 budget to sound like Euphoria.
Right.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, right.
Or, you know, and that's fine. And I, you know, I have a lot of independent artists that are amazing and will work with me in the smaller fees, mm-hmm. the less fees. But again, there's the back end. But like, again, with Discovery, this music sounds dated. The music is generic. We need a whole new music makeover.
Right.
You know, we need a music overhaul. This is mm-hmm. not except, that's because you have shitty music in your library because you're not paying. Because
right.
producers, showrunners, all of the executives mm-hmm. that love to give music notes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk to your bosses that are doing terrible things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Terrible things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It gets me so mad. It gets me
yeah.
very heated.
Yeah.
It's just, it's.
I mean, it's nice to see that you care. And it's nice to know that you are passionate about protecting the rights of artists and composers.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of people in the film industry who don't think about that. And I mean, it seems obvious that, oh, you're a music supervisor, that you should, but it's not obvious to a lot of people. And I think a lot of artists who, you know, looked at music supervisors as kind of this ethereal group of gatekeepers, they don't really think of many of you as people. They think of you as gatekeepers, or, you know, and just the power players. But to like know that you actually care is like really, really nice to hear.
And I tweeted about it. It's your music, your.
I saw that.
What is it? Because I'd love to promote it.
Your music, your future. I believe something it's like called that.
And I'm It's a some of the best composers. Yes. I think
Gabriel Mann's in that. I saw that.
Vanacore, mm-hmm. who's amazing. Mm-hmm. The guys over at Extreme Music.
Right.
Like. If you're a songwriter, especially if you work kind of in the reality space, go sign up for this.
I'll put a link in the show notes for you to
please, because I think that it's really important that the more people also know that this is happening and this is what could happen to your music.
Yes.
Is, you know, you can take action and when there are, you know, and then also when you're signing licenses and stuff, like mm-hmm. I make sure whenever I'm talking to the independent artists that I talk to them about, I go through the quote request with them.
Oh, nice. Oh,
that's I will great. Tell them, write these words, write these letters, MFN.
Yes, most favored nations.
Yes, I will tell them. And they're like, what? And like, just try, that means that whatever they get, you get, everything mm-hmm. is fair.
Yes.
And I let them know, you know, this is what this means. No, we don't own anything. And then don't ever give your rights unless someone wants to pay you $1 million for your song. Don't give your rights away. Your license is you're lending it to us. You're mm-hmm. allowing us to use it. We don't take any ownership. Somebody mm-hmm. wants to take ownership, you know, bring it to a lawyer to make sure it's fair.
Totally.
So, you know, I know some of these kids can't necessarily afford a lawyer, but I will go through and just let them know there's no funny business or weirdness, and whether you're getting the same piece of paper and contract that Beyonce is getting, you know, when we're trying to license music.
Sure.
So there's just because you're getting, you know, you're an independent artist and don't have publishing versus somebody that's with Sony ATV or Warner mm-hmm. Chappell, it's the same thing, because I want people to understand what they're doing.
How much negotiation is allowed on a contract that you send to an indie artist?
Not a lot.
Because
a lot of times I can only do what I can do mm-hmm. on that level.
What advice would you give independent artists who are looking to get their music synced more? Let's say maybe they've had a couple or maybe they've had none. Like, what do you recommend artists on how they can kind of break into sync licensing?
I mean, look, it's hard. We get a lot of emails. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to know your business. To know, to have splits figured out, make sure you have full legal names, mm-hmm. you know who represents everybody that's owns the copyright, be registered with the PRO, mm-hmm. Have contact for everybody, have an instrumental available, have high-res files available, have a clean available. If there's
like no swearing,
correct.
Yeah.
And you know, for one of the networks that I work for, they want what's called a clean wipe, or syllable to syllable, meaning if you're saying fuck in your song, you can't hear and have it be like silent or like you can't hear that. Like it needs to be completely removed, or, you know, if you have the luxury of saying another word, then you can do that as well. So it's not like a complete dropout.
Do you need stems? Are they helpful?
I think I never do. Okay. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think trailers like to have stems from going to panels and stuff, because I know nothing about trailers, but I love learning about because it's such a different business.
Right.
And I know that they'll really fuck with stems and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't usually need them.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Very, very rarely. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to know, you know, when I have people email me about, you know, getting their music at Insecure, I'm like, yeah, I don't do that show, bro. So that's kind of a turn off.
Right. Do your research.
Do your research. Yeah. And also try and find independent licensing companies, there's a million out there, and try and get on board with them because those are the people. So I, you know, they can sign off on everybody. So I don't have to do, if there's four writers doing four quote requests and four master requests, like one stops are always much better.
Yes.
But knowing also, so when I say, you know, okay, who's this person's publishing company, you know, is it with them, like, just know who it is, even whether it's like Universal, but also whether it's Pulse or Cobalt, because that will change how I can use the song. Meaning, with some of the majors, they just, you know, demand more money. And there's not, oh, my manager can make a call. That doesn't work. That's very bad business between me and my sync licensing people at the labels. It just, it creates bad blood. That's only when it's like something really crazy important, but I try to never, ever do that. Or if I do do that, it's like, hey, Warner Chappell, just so you know, like the manager's involved in this one, whatever. But that's never going to happen. Like, oh, my manager will, no, no. So if a writer on the song is with a major or one of the major indies, that's going to change how I can pitch the song because I know that I'm going to need to have more money for that. And I might be filling out a party scene with three or four just, you know, background, you know, vibe type music.
Sure.
That instead of, you know, going to a library, I'd rather support an independent artist, give them $3,000, get them in a cool show. So, but I can't, but, you know, Pulse or Universal will never clear anything for $3,000. So that I'm not going to put it there. I'm going to wait until I have a spot where I can spend that money.
And so for artists to know all of this information going in, when you collaborate with another songwriter or artist or producer, knowing are they represented by a major publisher, because that is going to affect your...
Or just who the publisher is. Because sometimes people would never think that, you know, Cobalt is a major, but they are, you know, they're amazing and they own a lot of copyrights and, you know, Pulse are big deal. Like just because it's not, you know, Sony ATV, Warner Chappell, BMG, or Universal, there are other major publishers.
Totally. And though you made a really great point. Go work with a licensing company, a sync licensing company, because, you know, a lot of artists, I would say probably more of the practice 3, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, people would go directly to music supervisors. And now I've seen that that supervisors have kind of pretty much put up a wall saying like, I can't handle all of these pitches. Like, I love you, but like,
I
just, there's not enough time. So I get, you know, the era of tweeting a song to a supervisor and hoping they use it. That's actually how I got my song to Lindsay Wolfington. And
that's awesome.
But this was, you know, this is 2009 or 10 or something like that.
I mean,
that.
If
like,
I can, I will, but it's just a lot of times I just can't, or I'll open up the window and I have every intention to do that, but then I don't know, something will happen and I can't.
Right.
So,
but the sync licensing companies you trust because they, you know, that they vet their music, you know, that you're not going to have to deal with clearing samples or educating on, you know, that, you know, this is a sample and you have to get this cleared or, and then figure out the other parties and everything like that.
And if there is a sample, like it's just, don't not give us the information because you're afraid we're going to not move forward with a license or something. You know what I mean? Don't try to hide it. Like, just tell me, because maybe that means I'll get you a bigger placement. You know, just don't. And if there's a sample in the song, either take it out or do what you need to do. And that is on you to figure out what, you know, what needs to be done so that, you know,
to clear it.
You can clear it.
Right.
Know your business. Know what you're getting into. Don't tell me when I ask who your publishing company is, do not say ASCAP or BMI.
Yep.
Just don't, because that's a click.
Well, this is a good point to remind everyone, chapter 13 of the book, educate yourself on how all this stuff is broken down and it works. And I have a list of 25 sync licensing companies that a lot of music supervisors say they like working with. And so this is a kind of a good place to start. So I ask everyone the same question. How do you define what it means to make it in the new music business?
I guess to be able to... live off of what you want of what of your work, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's really hard. I mean, no. Just as long, you know.
That's great. I mean, it's simple and it's, I think it's.
To make it mm-hmm. is, yeah, I would say that it's your career.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I would say.
That's great. I love it.
Yeah.
Jen Malone, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is fantastic.
Thank you.
Yes. Really appreciate it. Is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out distrokid.com.